Okay, so you're here with us on the deep dive because, well, you want to get a real grasp on complicated stuff, right? Like,
Yeah.
without getting bogged down, you want to understand the big picture.
Exactly.
And that's precisely what we're going for in this deep dive. We've got a whole web of themes to untangle,
Well,
and
that's a fascinating one.
it really is, but also kind of unsettling, to be honest. We're going to look at the connections between, I guess you could say, some fringe political ideas,
Right.
some key players who are, well, they're shaping things.
For sure.
And how the whole system, how things are run, how that might actually shift in the future.
Yeah. And you know what? As we were going through all the material you gave us for this,
Oh, yeah.
what's really striking is how much overlap there is between all these different areas.
Right.
Like, we've got these seemingly separate worlds that are all kind of converging.
Right.
And yeah, we've zeroed in on five key areas where these connections are just really strong.
Okay, so let's lay out the roadmap for today. We'll start by diving into this thing called the Dark Enlightenment, right? And it's tied to this neo-reactionary thought, or NRX, I think I've seen it called.
Yeah, NRX, that's the shorthand.
So we'll break down what that's all about, who the main thinkers are, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Then we're going to tackle this Project 2025,
Huge one.
which is basically the Heritage Foundation's, it's like their grand plan.
Yeah, their blueprint for how they would want an administration to be run.
Exactly. And then we'll shift gears and look at these controversies swirling around Andrew Tate
Oh, yeah.
and Larry Ellison, two very different
It's a
figures,
completely different world.
but both in the headlines for, well, for some pretty intense reasons. And then finally, we'll wrap up by exploring this whole idea of network states,
Fascinating concept.
which is basically,
Kind of a wild west out there right now.
it is, it's like trying to create new countries almost.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, again, how all of these pieces, these separate things, might actually be influencing each other.
Yeah, it all ties together in ways you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, absolutely. So to get our heads around all of this, you've given us a huge stack of material.
Oh, yeah, it's been quite a deep dive.
It has. We've got stuff on Andrew Tate, Curtis Yarvin, the whole Dark Enlightenment scene, the situation down in El Salvador, Elon Musk's ventures,
Right.
the for-profit prison system, that whole world, the GEO group
It's a
specifically,
huge player there.
the Heritage Foundation's work, Larry Ellison's whole career trajectory. We've got stuff on mass deportation,
Oh.
deep dives into both NRX and network states.
Right.
Insights on Paul Dan's perspectives on Peter Thiel, and of course, the Project 2025 plan itself.
That's a lot.
It is, but that's why we're here. We're going to pull out the really important pieces, connect the dots for
Make
you.
sense of it all.
Exactly, and help you understand what all these interconnected ideas could mean down the line, what the implications are.
Yeah, the stakes are high.
They really are. All right, let's jump right in. Let's start by unpacking this whole Dark Enlightenment thing and its
Yeah.
connection to neo-reaction.
Okay, so NRX, that's the shorthand.
NRX, okay. What's
Wasn't.
the core idea?
So this whole thing emerged in the early 2000s, really, and it's fundamentally a rejection of modern democratic and egalitarian ideals.
Like everything we think of as progress.
Exactly, the core tenets of liberal society.
Wow.
Key figures in this space. We've got Curtis Yarvin, who wrote under the pseudonym Mencius Moldbug.
That's a name that comes up a lot.
It does. And Nick Land, who's more on the philosophical side.
So they're not just saying tweak this policy or that.
They're going way deeper.
It's a full-on critique of the system itself.
Absolutely. They're questioning the entire basis of how we structure society.
Wow. Okay. So what are some of the key arguments they're making?
Well, there are a few big ones. They're deeply skeptical of democracy, see it as inherently
Like
unstable.
it's bound to fail.
Yeah, prone to decline, corruption, all that.
Interesting.
They also completely reject egalitarianism.
The idea that everyone should be equal.
Exactly. They argue that inequality, human inequality, it's just
And it's
natural.
baked in.
Yeah, driven by genetics, they're trying to achieve equality. It's pointless, even harmful in their view.
So they're saying the very foundation of what we consider fair and just, that's flawed.
That's their core argument.
Okay. They also reject this concept of Whig historiography.
Right, which is this idea that history is inevitably progressing towards greater liberty and democracy.
Like a straight line, always moving forward.
Exactly. And they see that as naive, ultimately wrong.
So they're saying progress isn't a given.
No, not at all. They argue that other forms of governance, maybe less liberal ones, could be more effective, even preferable.
Okay, so if they're rejecting the current model, what are they proposing instead?
Well, one of the things Yarvin talks about is neocameralism.
I've seen that term, but I don't really get it.
It's pretty radical. Imagine a society not as one big nation state,
Okay.
but as a bunch of smaller, independent entities, almost like city states, And these entities would be run like corporations, super efficient, top-down structure.
So like GovCorp, I think I saw that somewhere.
Exactly, GovCorp, competing with each other.
Like a free market, but for governance.
Exactly. And they believe that would lead to better governance overall.
So the big takeaway is less big government, more these smaller, more authoritarian units.
That's the gist of it.
Okay, then there's this idea of the cathedral. It sounds kind of ominous.
Yeah, doesn't it? The cathedral, or sometimes the synopsis, it's their term for what they see as this dominant network of
Like
institutions.
what kind of institutions?
Universities, the media, government bureaucracies, the whole mainstream establishment.
Okay.
And they believe this network, even if it's unintentional, pushes egalitarianism and democracy as the only legitimate models.
And shuts down anyone who disagrees.
Exactly, suppresses dissenting viewpoints. So in their view, what seems like a neutral establishment is actually this powerful unified force.
Pushing a specific ideology.
Right.
Okay, so that's their view of the cathedral. Now, these ideas, they definitely sound pretty fringe. How do they connect to other far-right movements like the alt-right or white supremacy?
That's a crucial question. You see, the Dark Enlightenment is often seen as the intellectual foundation for the alt-right.
Like the theoretical basis.
Exactly. It gives them, well, a more sophisticated sounding
Even
rationale.
though it's still controversial.
Oh, absolutely. But it gives them arguments for their anti-democratic views.
They're anti-egalitarian views.
Right. And often their racist sentiments.
So there's definitely overlap.
There is. While NRX tends to be more elitist, more intellectual than the populist alt-right,
Right.
they share this core rejection of liberal democracy.
And this belief in some kind of social hierarchy
Exactly.
and the connection to white supremacy seems undeniable.
Yeah, with all this talk of inherent racial differences, it's hard to ignore.
Right, like they might use these academic sounding terms.
Racial realism, things like
But
that.
it's basically a belief in racial hierarchies.
Which aligns perfectly with white supremacist ideology.
And then there are links to groups like VDR.
Right, known for their anti-immigration stance, white nationalism.
And some even see connections to neo-fascism.
Yes, especially with Nick Land and his idea of capitalist eschatology.
That sounds intense.
It is. It's this vision of a, oh yeah, you've got techno-authoritarianism,
Okay.
which imagines this technologically advanced authoritarian state, often with an implied racial element. And then you've got the more explicitly ethno-nationalist interpretations.
Which are just straight up about creating a white ethno state.
Right. No ambiguity there.
Okay, I also came across these terms offensive and defensive accelerationism and this word hyperstition. What do those mean?
Okay, so offensive accelerationism, that's about actively causing the collapse.
Doing things to make it happen.
Right. Sabotage, violence, whatever it takes.
Okay, and defensive.
That's more about preparing for the collapse.
Like stocking up, building bunkers.
Yeah, surviving the inevitable.
Interesting. And hyperstition.
Oh, that's a fascinating concept. It's this idea that ideas, just by spreading and being believed.
Can actually make themselves real.
Exactly, like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Wow. So the more NRX ideas are out there, the more likely they think they'll come true.
Right, because they believe they're actively contributing to it just by believing it.
That's a powerful concept. Now, the outline also mentioned a connection to cyberpunk literature and science fiction. How does that fit in?
Well, think about it. Cyberpunk often portrays these futures that are technologically advanced.
But it's also dystopian, right?
Yeah, very fragmented, unequal societies, often under authoritarian rule or corporate control.
Okay.
And that resonates with the NRX critique of modern society.
Their rejection of the current system.
Exactly. And these stories, these fictional worlds, they provide a kind of cultural vocabulary for them.
Like a vision of what a post-cathedral world might look like.
Exactly.
Interesting. This all feels very much on the fringes, but the outline suggested a potential for these ideas to actually influence the mainstream. How could that happen?
That's the concern, right? That these ideas could seep into mainstream politics without people even realizing it.
Like a subtle shift.
Exactly. And there are a few examples. You've got someone like J.D. Vance, the former vice president.
Right.
He's had associations with individuals linked to NRX ideas. Yeah. And that's raised questions about whether those views are influencing his policies.
Interesting.
And then there's this whole way of talking about migrants, framing them primarily as temporary labor.
Rather than people with their own lives and aspirations.
Exactly. And some see that as echoing neo-reactionary ideas about social hierarchy.
It's like some people are just meant to be workers.
Yeah, disposable labor, not full members of society.
So these are subtle ways these ideas could gain traction.
Without ever being explicitly labeled as NRX.
That's something to think about. Okay, let's move on to Project 2025. What's the big idea behind this initiative?
So Project 2025, also known as the 2025 Presidential Transition Project, it was launched by the Heritage Foundation back in April 2022.
Okay.
And it's way more than just a policy platform. It's a full-on blueprint for how they want a conservative administration to run.
Like a how-to manual.
Exactly. And they're not just thinking about the transition period.
Right.
They're laying out a long-term vision.
Okay, so it's more than just a list of policy suggestions.
Way more. It's a three-pronged approach.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So first, you've got the mandate for leadership.
Yeah.
This is a massive document, super detailed,
okay,
outlining specific policies across every area of government.
Wow.
Then you've got a huge focus on personnel.
Like who gets hired?
Exactly. Identifying and vetting individuals who are ideologically aligned.
So they want people in place who are fully on board with their agenda.
100%. And then the third part is training.
Like boot camps?
Literally, they have a presidential personnel office boot camp.
Wow.
To make sure these appointees are ready to hit the ground running.
From day one.
Exactly. And they even have a 180-day playbook.
What's that?
It outlines the immediate actions they want taken in the first 6 months of a new administration.
So they're not messing around. They've got a really organized, strategic approach.
Highly strategic. Very well funded, too.
Okay, let's get into some of these policy recommendations. What are they proposing in areas like the economy and healthcare?
All right, so on the economic front, it's all about big tax cuts, slashing regulations.
The classic conservative playbook.
Exactly, but the concern is that these cuts, when combined with their proposed reductions in social programs,
could actually end up hurting the middle class and working families.
Yeah, some analyses suggest that potentially even leading to higher taxes or fewer services for those groups.
While the wealthy get even wealthier.
That's the critique.
Okay, what about healthcare?
They want to completely overhaul the healthcare system.
Okay, how so?
Well, first off, they want to reverse the FDA's approval of mifepristone.
The abortion medication.
Exactly. And then they want to aggressively enforce the Comstock Act.
Which is?
This old law that basically bans mailing abortion medications.
Wow.
The goal being a nationwide ban on abortion.
Okay.
And they're even talking about potentially monitoring pregnancies.
Really? Like to enforce the ban?
That's the implication.
Wow. That's
pretty extreme.
It is. What about birth control and other reproductive health services?
They want to restrict access to birth control, ban IVF.
In vitro fertilization.
Yeah, make big changes to Medicare, like making Medicare Advantage the default.
Which is?
The private insurance option.
Yeah.
And they want to prevent the government from negotiating drug prices.
Which could lead to much higher drug costs.
Exactly. And then they want to put a lifetime cap on Medicaid benefits.
So limiting how much people can receive.
Yeah, and completely defund Planned Parenthood.
Okay, so those are some major changes. What about their plans for education and the environment?
So in education, it's all about parental rights and local control.
Okay.
But specifically, they want to eliminate what they call gender ideology from schools.
What does that mean in practice?
It could mean restricting discussion of LGBTQ plus issues,
yeah,
changing sex education standards.
So basically controlling what kids are learning.
Exactly. Limiting exposure to certain ideas.
Okay. And what about the environment?
They want to downsize NOAA.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Right. Cut funding for renewable energy, boost fossil fuel production.
Okay.
And they want to limit climate change research.
Like they don't want to fund it.
Exactly. And they want to get rid of the interagency working group on the social cost of carbon.
Which basically assesses the economic damage from climate change.
Right. So they're essentially trying to downplay the whole issue.
Yeah. And when it comes to social issues and civil rights, the proposed changes also seem pretty drastic.
Yeah. They're going after diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
DEI.
Yeah. Want to eliminate them across the government.
Wow.
And they want to allow discrimination against LGBTQ plus individuals.
On what grounds?
Based on religious freedom arguments.
Okay.
And they're even talking about undermining same-sex marriage rights.
So rolling back those protections?
Exactly. And they want to criminalize certain expressions of gender nonconformity, even the distribution of pornography.
Wow.
And they've got this proposal to prosecute what they call anti-white racism.
Okay.
And they want to remove any mention of gender equality or equity from federal laws.
Which could have huge implications.
Oh, yeah. It could affect all sorts of anti-discrimination laws.
And some interpretations suggest they might even try to force states to discriminate against LGBTQ plus people.
That's the concern, using federal power to enforce those views.
Okay, let's shift to immigration. What are the main points of their plan there?
It's all about mass detention and deportation.
Okay.
They want to militarize the border even more.
Okay.
Massively expand detention facilities, make deportation mandatory for more offenses.
So basically, cracking down hard.
Exactly. And they want to expand E-Verify nationwide.
Which is?
The system for checking employees' immigration status.
Okay.
And they want to increase cooperation between local and federal law enforcement on immigration.
So more sharing of information.
Yeah. And they want to penalize cities and states that don't cooperate with federal immigration enforcement.
Like sanctuary cities.
Exactly. They want to reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy.
Which basically forces asylum seekers to wait in Mexico while their cases are processed.
Right. And they want to dismantle the Flores Settlement Agreement. It sets standards for the detention of migrant children.
They
want to be able to detain them longer.
And finally, they want to shift away from family-based immigration
to a more skills-based system.
So prioritizing people with certain skills.
Exactly.
Okay, last but not least, what are their proposals for national security and law enforcement?
So they're pushing this idea of de-weaponizing the government.
Which sounds kind of Orwellian.
It does, doesn't it? But what it really means is they want more political control over agencies like the FBI and the DOJ.
Like more oversight from Congress.
Exactly. Especially when it comes to investigations that could be politically sensitive.
Okay.
And one of the most controversial proposals is to replace career civil servants with political appointees.
People loyal to the president.
Exactly. Which could lead to a much more politicized, less independent bureaucracy.
So basically stacking the deck with people who agree with them.
That's the concern.
Wow, this Project 2025 really paints a very different picture of how the country could be run. What are some of the main criticisms that have been leveled against it?
Oh, there's been a lot of pushback. People are worried about the potential for authoritarianism.
Like concentrating power in the executive branch.
Exactly. And they're worried about the erosion of civil liberties.
Like the proposals on abortion, LGBTQ plus rights.
Right. Those are seen as huge steps backwards.
And then there are concerns about undermining the civil service.
Yeah. Replacing experienced professionals with political loyalists. That's a big worry.
It does seem like it could weaken the checks and balances of the system.
And then there's the Heritage Foundation itself.
Right.
They've been criticized for spreading misinformation about the 2020 election.
Which undermines democracy.
Exactly. It's hypocritical, some say.
Yeah. And then there are these past controversies.
Like Jason Richwine and his views on race and IQ.
Right. Which raises questions about the underlying ideology driving some of these proposals.
So yeah, there's a lot of concern about Project 2025.
It's definitely a controversial agenda. Okay, let's turn our attention now to Andrew Tate. He's been a very prominent and often polarizing figure. What's the latest on his legal situation?
So Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan have been facing some serious legal trouble, mainly in Romania.
Right.
In June of 2023, they were indicted along with two Romanian women on a bunch of charges.
Like what?
Rape, human trafficking, forming an organized crime group.
Wow.
And the human trafficking charges are specifically about sexual exploitation.
Okay.
And they allegedly use this method called the lover boy method.
Which it is.
It involves manipulating and exploiting victims, often through feigned romantic interest.
Wow. And have there been investigations into other potential crimes?
Yeah, they've been looking into allegations of trafficking minors, sexual relations with a minor,
okay,
money laundering, even witness tampering.
So it's a pretty wide-ranging investigation.
It is. Very serious allegations.
And his legal problems aren't limited to Romania, right?
No. In March of 2024, British police issued arrest warrants for both Andrew and Tristan.
Okay.
In connection with accusations of rape and human trafficking.
Back to when?
Incidents between 2012 and 2015.
So these are older allegations?
They are, but still very serious.
And what other legal challenges is he facing?
Well, there's a civil case in Romania about alleged tax evasion.
Okay.
A civil lawsuit in the UK from four women accusing him of rape and assault.
Wow.
And another lawsuit in Florida alleging coercion into sex work and defamation.
So he's facing legal action on multiple fronts.
He is. And it's worth noting that the Tates themselves have filed a defamation lawsuit against one of their accusers.
Okay, so it's getting messy.
Very messy.
Now, he was initially detained in Romania, right?
Well,
what's his current status?
So both brothers were taken into custody, then released to house arrest.
Okay.
But in February of this year, 2025, the Romanian court lifted their travel restrictions.
So they're free to move around now.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah. Now, beyond all these legal issues, Tate has also courted controversy in other ways.
Oh, yeah. He's known for his provocative, often misogynistic statements.
And he has a huge online following.
Massive. And he's got these clear connections to the far right.
And his rhetoric often echoes neo-reactionary themes.
Definitely, especially around traditional gender roles, social hierarchies, that kind of thing.
And remember, he tried to start that political party in the UK.
BRUV.
Right, which suggests he wants to translate his online influence into real-world power.
Exactly.
And then there's his conversion to Islam,
which has generated a lot of discussion and skepticism.
Like people questioning his motives.
Right, wondering if it's genuine.
So the Andrew Tate story is really a case study in online influence and how it intersects with real-world problems.
And the challenges of accountability in the digital age.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to Larry Ellison, another big name in tech, but one who's also attracted his fair share of criticism. What are some of the controversies surrounding him and Oracle?
So Oracle, under Ellison's leadership, has been criticized a lot for its business practices and its corporate culture.
Okay.
It's known for being super competitive.
Like cutthroat.
Yeah, some would say ruthless even. Former employees have described a demanding environment.
Where it's all about winning.
Exactly. And there's this book, Everyone Else Must Fail.
Mm-hmm.
It paints a pretty critical picture of Ellison's management style.
Like what?
Super aggressive, controlling, very focused on dominance.
Interesting. And what about Oracle's marketing?
Also known for being aggressive, sometimes directly attacking competitors.
Okay.
And then you've got the whole issue of their software licensing policies.
Which are notoriously complex.
Oh, yeah. They're often described as deliberately opaque, designed to maximize revenue through audits and fees.
And that's led to a lot of legal battles, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Huge disputes with organizations like the City of Sunrise, Mars Incorporated.
Wow!
Even Rimini Street, which provides third-party support for Oracle software.
So they're going after everyone.
Pretty much. And even software that seems free, like Java SE and VirtualBox.
Okay.
Can end up costing you a lot in retroactive licensing fees.
If they decide you're using it commercially.
Exactly. And then there are these accusations of soft audit campaigns.
Oh, what are those?
Where they basically let potential violations pile up.
And then hit you with a huge bill.
Exactly.
Wow. So they're not exactly known for being customer friendly?
No, not really.
And he's also been involved in legal actions outside of the business world, right?
Yeah. Back in 2019, there was this billion-dollar lawsuit against him and some other big supporters of Israel.
What was that about?
It accused them of being involved in a conspiracy to ethnically cleanse Palestinians.
Wow.
But that case was dismissed in early 2024.
Okay.
And more recently, Ellison has stirred up controversy with his views on AI surveillance.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. What exactly did he say?
He was basically advocating for the use of AI to constantly monitor people.
Like a Big Brother scenario.
Exactly. To make sure everyone's following the rules, to keep tabs on the police.
Wow.
He even suggested using AI-powered drones for high-speed chases.
So basically a high-tech surveillance state.
That's the idea. And people were quick to compare it to China's social credit system.
Which is a whole other can of worms.
It is. And there were a lot of concerns about privacy, civil liberties.
Like a slippery slope towards a dystopian future.
Exactly.
So Ellison is definitely a divisive figure. Some people admire his success.
His business acumen, his boldness.
But others are deeply troubled by his tactics and his vision of the future.
Yeah, his views on technology and society are definitely raising red flags for a lot of people.
Okay, now let's try to connect some of these dots. How might all these seemingly separate areas we've been discussing actually converge or influence each other?
That's where things get really interesting, right? So you've got someone like Peter Thiel.
The billionaire tech investor.
Right. He's been a major donor to conservative causes, a big supporter of Trump.
Okay.
And he's got known connections to people in the dark enlightenment. Yeah. And he co-authored that controversial book, The Diversity Myth.
Uh-huh.
And he's been seen at events that have also been attended by white nationalists.
So his ties to these fringe ideologies are pretty clear.
They are. And then there are these whistleblower allegations.
About what?
That Thiel and Elon Musk have been trying to exert a neo-reactionary influence on the government.
By working through the Republican Party.
Exactly. Trying to shape policy from behind the scenes.
Wow. And Project 2025, it's now being led by Paul Dance.
Right.
Who's also had a conservative shift in his thinking.
Yeah. A pretty significant one.
And the project itself, it seems to reflect some of the core principles of NRX.
Absolutely. This whole idea of expanding executive power, reshaping social norms.
In ways that could be seen as hierarchical, discriminatory.
Exactly. And it all echoes the anti-democratic, anti-egalitarian sentiments at the heart of NRX.
And then you've got Elon Musk himself.
Right. Who, in our scenario here.
After Trump's return to the presidency.
Yeah. He's been appointed as a senior advisor to the president.
and the head of this new Department of Government Efficiency.
Doogie.
Right, Doogie.
So he's a major player in all this.
He is. And so we have this theoretical foundation in the Dark Enlightenment.
Right.
A concrete political agenda in Project 2025.
Right.
And these influential figures who may be sympathetic to some of these ideas.
Or actively promoting them.
So where does someone like Andrew Tate fit into all this?
Well, he might not be directly aligned with NRX ideologically.
But there are some shared themes.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Like what?
His deep anti-establishment sentiment.
Distrust of institutions, what NRX calls the cathedral.
Exactly. And this desire for radical change.
Like blowing up the system.
Yeah, those are all things that resonate with Tate's rhetoric.
And with a lot of his followers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So even if it's not a formal connection, there's definitely an overlap in terms of shared frustrations.
Like a sense that things are broken and need to be fixed.
Exactly. And that can be a powerful motivator.
And we can't forget about the economic dimension.
Mm. Right. Project 2025's focus on tax cuts, deregulation.
That aligns with some libertarian views that have been associated with NRX.
Yeah, like Peter Thiel's earlier thinking.
So there's a potential convergence there as well.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that these ideologies, these individuals, they can have real world impacts.
Like in what ways?
Well, you've got Ellison's vision of AI surveillance, Tate's influence on social media.
Shaping young people's minds.
Right. And then Project 2025's goals for reshaping the government.
So it's all playing out on different levels.
But potentially converging towards a very different future.
Okay, let's wrap up by talking about network states. What's the basic concept here?
So network states, it's a relatively new idea.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it until recently.
It's gaining.